change and its possible impacts on the Florida Keys. All meetings are open to the public. More information at keysglee.com. That's a notice from the WLRN Community Bulletin Board.
Today's topical current, Joseph Cooper with you, along with Bonnie Berman. Hope you had nice holidays, Bonnie.
Yes, thank you, and you too, and yes, to our listeners.
Of course.
Happy holidays.
Well, though often unspoken of, age discrimination is still at play in the workforce. For those past the age of 50 who've been laid off, it's particularly difficult. Join us now as executive coach and consultant. He's Paul Bernard. And he joins us from New York City. Welcome to you, Paul.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Good to have you. It's such a shock to be job hunting after years of employment. How does one avoid the despair and depression that might set in?
Well, that's a very, very important question. I think the most important thing to remember is that one door closes, another one opens, and it's extremely important to move forward with a positive attitude. Sometimes that's easier said than done, but it is probably the most crucial first piece in a job transition strategy. Because if you can't think positively about the future, it's going to be very, very hard to market yourself to a prospective employer. That being said, it is an extremely traumatic event to go through. The Stanford study of 15 years ago indicating that next to the death of a spouse or going to prison, losing your job was one of the most traumatic life events to go through. So it's extremely difficult. But it's very, very important to surround yourself with a support system, and to remind yourself every day that you're a worthwhile product to sell, that in and of itself is will get you that plus the a good resume and persistence and knowing what to say and how to say it in an interview will get you where you need to be.
Of course, it must be difficult losing your job, especially if you have benefits that suddenly disappear and you're concerned about health care for you and your family.
Oh, it's extremely traumatizing. This is why I usually advise clients to prepare for the worst, so to speak. In other words, I advise all clients, even if they feel that they're secure about their job, to really have at least 6 months of expenses in the bank. The healthcare situation is extremely traumatic because even for people who have good benefits, they are permitted to go on to COBRA, but basically once COBRA kicks in, you have to pay the company 102% of what the company was paying. And if you have a family, that can easily top out at well over $1,200 a month. So it's extremely difficult. So one of the things that I usually encourage clients to do is to take advantage of whatever health benefits that they can take advantage of while they're still on severance.
How long does COBRA last?
COBRA lasts for 18 months.
So then they're on their own after that.
Yeah, in many situations they'll be able to supplement it with another program, but the benefits are extremely limited.
So, what are the keys actually to avoiding the negativity and the despair?
I think the most important thing is to say I've been through this before. I've been through more difficult things. And to be very honest, to surround yourself with positive people, to have a support network. I'll start talking about some of the things not to do, which is sometimes clients stay in the closet and don't tell their family and loved ones that they've lost their job. I think that's one of the worst things that people can do. I think people need to keep body, mind, and soul together. It is not a time to be drinking, to be taking drugs. It is also not a time to start eating things that aren't good for you. To not get enough sleep. Those are probably the most important things to begin with. In other words, above all, do no harm. Exercise is also important too. Getting into a regular routine of a job search, and by a regular routine, I mean that people need to say, "All right, I'm going to work at this for at least 4 to 5 hours a day." And 4 to 5 hours a day of job search is basically the equivalent to 8 to 9 hours of working in the workaday world. I think another way to look at it positively and to avoid the despair is to not make mistakes in a job search. And let me clarify what I mean. There was a recent study, and I just wrote an article, ways to use and not use job boards. It's interesting that, unfortunately, many people spend too much time on job boards. And interestingly, people over 50, the study indicated, spend more time on job boards than any other demographic group. It's probably the most ineffective way to search for a job. It is very ineffective for people to spend 5 or 6 hours a day looking for jobs online. The most important way to look for a job is to look at things in what I call a 10-20-70 rule. People should spend 10% of their time looking for jobs online, 20% of their time working with recruiters, and 70% of their time networking. Too often, people get themselves onto a treadmill of spending 70% of their time online. And it is a very, very ineffective way to look for a job. And ineffective job search techniques add to despair because it perpetuates the period of unemployment. The other reason I think it's very important for people to network is that it forces you not to isolate. If you're spending all of your job search time in front of the computer screen, you're isolating, which leads to melancholy, and it becomes a downward spiral instead of a positive upward spiral.
So how does one use networking successfully? I know you said there are dangerous mistakes you can make when networking. How does one use it successfully?
Well, first of all, have a plan. You need to make sure that you have some idea of what you're networking for. When you schedule a networking conversation, are you looking for job information or referral or advice? I'll give you an example. A client of mine went in to talk to the CEO of a company who happened to have gone to law school with her father, and she hadn't seen this fellow in a long time. And he was very happy to see her, and she said, "Well, I'm open to opportunities here at the company." And he said, "Don't ask me to be your career counselor." In other words, make up your mind about what you want to do. And luckily, because of her family relationship to this fellow, she was able to clarify after working with me about what she wanted to do, and then he was able to make connections. But basically, by going in and not having a plan, she spent almost an hour with him, and his billing rate is probably $5,000 an hour. I mean, the other thing is that people frequently focus. Networking is about relationships, and you shouldn't just ask for help. You should also offer something in return. And sometimes people sound desperate. "Hi, I went to business school with you, or I went to college with you 15 years ago, and you haven't heard from me. And can I have your Rolodex?" That's not the way to network. It's very, very important. Even in a casual situation, to say, you know, you've been very, very helpful. Thanks for the support. Thanks for the clarity. Thanks for the advice. Thanks for the contacts. And by the way, here's an article that I think you might find interesting. People mess up with networking when they don't keep good records. That's another problem that I see. Suppose someone says, well, send me a list of places where you might think, where you think I might be able to help you, and try to send me that in the next couple of weeks, or follow up with me in the next couple of weeks, and you don't do it.
Right.
That's deadly. Another problem that I've seen with clients, and this is a special issue, there is a big, big need right now to respect privacy and confidentiality. And if someone gives you confidential information in a networking conversation, for instance, if someone says, you know, I can put you in touch with such and such a person, but by the way, I'm probably going to be leaving my employer in the next 90 days, and you disclose that information, you can really alienate a lot of people by doing that. The other issue is that with networking is a tool to get face-to-face conversation, and social networking, people use social networking, if you're using social networking appropriately, it should be to gain face-to-face conversations. It shouldn't be for an online chat. Email and online conversation is the coldest form of communication, followed by telephone, which is a little bit warmer, followed by face-to-face, which is the most warm. People make mistakes when they don't ask for a face-to-face interview. Just because you've gotten someone connected, gotten a connection to someone through LinkedIn, doesn't mean that you're networking. You can use social networking as a research tool, but it's really much, much, much more important to get that face-to-face conversation.
Right.
Another thing that people do with networking is to pester their contacts. If someone says, oh, look, it's Christmas, I'm about to head out of town, follow up with me in 3 weeks, and I went through this with a client at Thanksgiving time, he ended up calling the person the day after Thanksgiving to see if the person had come up with any additional contacts. I said, that's not appropriate. So those are some guidelines that I think help with clients. And the other issue that people need to think about with networking is that it takes some time. I mean, one client said, well, I used the University of Michigan Alumni Association, and I contacted three people, and only one of them got back to me. Networking doesn't work. Well, actually, a 33% return rate on networking is very, very not bad at all. Basically, for networking, in this economy, you probably need to have 70 to 90 face-to-face contacts to end up with 6 to 8 job interviews, to end up with 2 offers. And people find that daunting, but those are the numbers. And whereas during boom times you could have 45 to 60 face-to-face conversations to yield the job interviews that you need to get an offer, now it's higher than that.
We're speaking with executive coach and consultant Paul Bernard. He's joining us from New York City, and we're talking about how to rebound and regain employment. Paul, stay with us. We're going to take a short break. We'll also be taking some listener calls as well.
And you're listening to Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and NPR for the Florida Keys, 91.5 WKWM. South Florida Theater League and 91.3 WLRN offer same-day, half-price tickets at leading regional theaters and cultural organizations, including Broward Stage Door Theater, Parade Productions, Actors Playhouse, New Theater, and Area Stage. Information and a complete list of shows online at culturalconnection.org. culturalconnection.org, your ticket to the cultural arts.
Ken Rudin's grip on political trivia and mind for the minutiae of life in Washington is virtually unmatched. Or so he thought, until fifth grader Gabe Fleischer started his newsletter, Wake Up to Politics. I'm Jennifer Ludden, a political junkie face-off, plus Charles Blow on the meaning of minority. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
This afternoon at 2.
Like Topical Currents' Facebook page at facebook.com/topicalcurrents. Join the conversation, post a comment, share links, and see what other listeners are saying at facebook.com/topicalcurrents.
And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper. We're rejoining executive coach and consultant Paul Bernard of Paul Bernard and Associates. How about a website, Paul, where people can learn more about you?
www.paulbernard.net.
And if you'd like to join in, our listener line is 1-800-743-WLRN, 1-800-743-9576, and also email, that's radio@wlrn.org. Perhaps you'd like to talk about your job search. Perhaps we'd like to hear from some HR execs and talk about what older workers should do to gain employment. And Bonnie, how about our next guest?
Our next guest, we're joined now by Ronald Henderson.
Along with Paul Bernard.
With Paul Bernard. After 26 years in various newspaper jobs, he was let go by the New York Newsday and unemployed for 13 months. He's now working as a registered nurse. He joins us from Freeport, New York. His book that he's written is How to Cope with Unemployment, Find a Job in Any Economy, and Save Money. Good afternoon to you, Ronald Henderson.
Oh, good afternoon to you, and thank you for having me.
So how were you able to rebound after that traumatic loss of a job?
Bonnie, I'm telling you, it was so difficult. And I heard what your previous person was saying about isolating yourself. And it was tremendously difficult because this had never happened to me. I'm sure that, you know, a lot of people who are unemployed, you know, they become isolated because this is a totally new experience for them.
I guess when you're frustrated, so, it's easy to start watching daytime TV or something and just saying...
Yeah, to try to just wonder what happened, you know? I mean, it's like the rug being pulled out from under you. People have even said to me, you know, it's like running into a brick wall. It's like falling off of a cliff. I mean, just the trauma from losing a job and not having an income is really, really
it's
devastating.
It's interesting that you say that. I mean, one of the things that I work with clients on from the very beginning is to make sure that they try as best they can to manage their time productively. And I make sure that people go out and spend time away from the computer. It is very, very easy, especially if people are on severance, to, you know, chill out and spend some time in front of the television. It's especially dangerous this time of year. Because it's very, very important for people to go out and meet and greet people tastefully and tactfully to prepare for the first quarter of the year. Generally, from approximately January 15th until April 15th, more than 50%, some of the studies indicate close to 60% of the new hires will happen. And so it's really a shame when people become very distracted and melancholy and isolate at any time during the year, but especially now when they're thinking about a job search, because if they don't jump into this with both feet, by the time they get a resume together and, before they have a strategy about what they're going to do and how they're going to do it, half the first quarter can be lost. And it's especially with the job market slowly improving, It's very, very, you know, timing is everything.
Ronald, how did you avoid the pitfalls of depression and despair?
I think initially what happened to me was, you know, I had been in the newspaper industry, but I had also trained to be a registered nurse. So the reality did not hit me initially. I did not think that I was going to have difficulty finding a job. You know, I knew that healthcare was one of the careers that was promising. And, you know, it's not until I went out and knocked on doors and, you know, got all of this rejection that I then suddenly realized, hey, wait, I'm this is like a quagmire situation. You know, I don't know how I'm going to, you know, survive this. So one of the things I want to say is to people is that if you cannot cope with unemployment, I mean, you absolutely can't cope, and you're finding yourself so isolated that, and you feel there's nothing you can do, you should reach out and try to get professional help.
Mm.
Now, I was able to just continue. I just felt that because of my efforts, I thought I was, you know, sort of organized and methodical. And I just felt that one way or the other, some kind of way, I was going to get a job. So I just kept knocking on doors, just exploring every opportunity. I knew unemployment was not going to do it for me. I really had no money to speak of. So I just, you know, kept knocking on doors. I got the unemployment just for a brief period of time. I don't think I got any more than 5 weeks of unemployment. And got a job at Sears, and I worked at Sears for, you know, minimum wage. And I also got a job through an agency. And the agency would send me out on jobs, you know, for nursing. And the combination of both of those jobs and in between that time, you know, recruiting, doing my job recruiting and so forth, I was able to get a job after being unemployed for 13 months. So that's how I did it.
Well, you were fortunate enough to have a fallback career, but what does one do if one doesn't have that?
Yes, Paul.
Well, I think that... Go ahead.
Go ahead, Paul.
Go ahead, Paul.
Well, I think that you bring up an interesting question that one always has to... have a fallback, and I frequently encourage clients to continuously reinvent themselves. I think that one of the ways to handle unemployment is to I just wrote an article on how not to lose your job. I mean, frequently, minimizing the impact or we are in this economy. There's no such thing as lifetime employment, but people frequently forget that one of their key jobs when they have a job is to avoid losing the job, and sometimes that involves keeping up on technology. Whether you're 25. Or 55, people should become facile with technology. I mean, I have a client now who's a university administrator, and it's a dicey situation because the university is going to be involved in layoffs in the next 6 months. And although, you know, her job is fairly secure, she is not at all facile enough with some of the computer programs that she should be skilled at. And I told her that, and she said, well, I'm too old to learn these things. And I said, you're basically saying that if you have that mantra, you're basically saying you're too old to work. I said, the university is offering courses to train you. You currently have a job. I think that it is extremely important
for people to, as soon as, if they have lost their job, to create a plan. How much money do I have? How many weeks do I have? Do I have to consider taking a job where I might be making less than I was making? All of these things, the first thing someone needs to do when they've lost his or her job is to do a radar sweep, you know, to collect the data. What is there a gap between what I'm bringing in through unemployment and what my monthly bills are? What resources do I have? Do I have family and friends that I might need to call upon? But what you don't do is hide out and wait until you're about to be evicted. I mean, most people that I work with are able to come up with some sort of support network to help them get to where they need to be. But the other thing is that, you know, people need to be realistic. Even for people in technology or healthcare jobs where the market is brisk, I usually tell clients that it will take a minimum of 4 months to find a job. And in many situations, it takes exponentially longer than that. I mean, my general rule of thumb is that it takes a minimum of 1 month for every $15,000 you're looking for. So people need to be prepared.
We're speaking with Paul Bernard. He's an executive coach and consultant. We're talking about employment. Also with us is Ronald Henderson. He's a registered nurse who was unemployed for 13 months before being reemployed. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll take some phone calls, too.
Right back to Topical Currents here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station. NPR for the Florida Keys is 91.5 WKWM, and we're also streaming online at WLRN.org. Join us on WLRN TV 17 on Thursday, December 27th, 9 p.m. for the documentary David Geffen, American Masters. Producer and record industry mogul Geffen has helped shape American popular culture. That's David Geffen, American Masters, Thursday, December 27th at 9 p.m., only on WLRN TV 17. The current temperature in Miami is 82 degrees, but we're cooling down into the 50s overnight.
You can kick off your holidays early in Key West as the island comes alive with the holiday spirit. At kwholidays.com, you'll find many holiday events. The Key West Harbor Walk of Lights brings the waterfront alive every evening with the sparkle of holiday lights on the water. You can tour Victorian guest houses with their holiday decorations in full bloom on the Key West Holiday Historic Inn Tour. kwholidays.com has the up-to-date details on all the holiday events in Key West. Brought to you by the Monroe County Tourist Development Council.
And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper. We're speaking with Paul Bernard. He's an executive coach and consultant. He's joining us from New York City. We're also speaking with Ronald Henderson, who lost his job after 26 years in the newspaper business. He's written How to Cope with Unemployment, Find a Job in Any Economy, and Save Money.
And let's take a call or two. First up, well, let's give out the number again. 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. And also email, that's radio at WLRN.org. First up, it's a caller from West Palm. This is Jose. Hello.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good.
Yeah, I was unemployed for about 3 years, and the only reason I was able to get a job, even though I'm really qualified on the field that I used to work with, which it was rental apartments and managers, is because I was introduced to an owner of a company, and then it's not what you know, but who you know. And that's what I was able to get the job. That's, even though I had a routine established of looking for work in the internet, calling people, networking with friends, and trying to find out how could I get a job. And the most frustrating part was that when I used to visit places, I saw that people were unqualified to perform the job, but they still have one. For some reason, it just went beyond my mind when I saw that.
Any comment?
Okay, well, you know, you never know when you're going to get the opportunity and finally land that job. Especially, my God, you were unemployed for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to, you know, whenever you get the opportunity, you could set up an interview or, you know, network with someone. You never know where that opportunity is going to come from. That's why it's good, from what Paul said, you always have to follow up.
And let me just interject. First of all, kudos to you for continuing to search. Unfortunately, a lot of people fold their tent when they've been out for that long. But I do think that, in essence, it is who you know, and that's why networking is so important. I think it's especially difficult for people in real estate-related fields because so much of the economy, so much of the crisis that we've been through has been related to real estate. But it would seem to me that with someone with your skill set, your ability to work with people, and your ability to close the sale and get people to trust you, that's important. It is sometimes frustrating when people say, my God, you know, I'm out and, you know, Skipper Muffy is working and they don't have half the skills that I do. But it's important to try as best you can to not be resentful. And obviously you were able to pull the rabbit out of the hat, and, you know, congratulations. Are you able to use your sales skills and your ability to work with people in your new job?
He's not on the line anymore. Okay. I'm sorry.
He fell off the line. We have an emailer, though. I spent years in education hiring many people, young, old, male, female, white, and minority. The most important determining factor in the interview was always appearance. It seems like common sense. Why is appearance at an interview considered superficial?
Well, I think that, let me just comment on that. I think that appearance is important because it's important to dress appropriately. And it's important to present yourself in a professional way. I think that too often, and I've seen this especially in a casual workplace sort of situation, people are puzzled about how not to dress, about how to dress for an interview. And I always encourage people you don't have to wear a top hat and tail, but I usually ask people to at least wear a jacket and tie and something professional looking for women. I can send, you know, some people some tips on what to do and how to do it and what not to do. But jewelry should be kept to a minimum for women. Colors that flatter you. People should minimize the amount of perfume or cologne that they wear.
Absolutely.
But I think that appearance is very important, but I would argue that it's important, the most important, no one wants to see a sloppy interviewee.
I've spoken with some HR directors, and their mantra is that person, when they walk in for that interview, that's the best they're going to be.
Yes.
So if there's something lacking there, it really throws up a warning sign to the interviewer.
Well, one of the things that keeps off-putting from an appearance point of view is if you don't make good eye contact. I mean, that's part of your appearance and how you project to the other person. Because if you don't make good eye contact, I mean, I was in the process of hiring someone, and this goes back 6 or 8 weeks ago, and, you know, she was, instead of looking at me, she was looking at some of the books on my shelf. And it was disconcerting, and she realized that she was paying more attention to the books on my shelf than she was to me. That
did
is,
you hire her?
No, I didn't. In fact, it was one of the key reasons that I decided not to hire her. Because she wasn't engaging with me. And how is she going to engage with clients? Is she going to look a client straight in the eye when they come in, or is she going to be off drifting? It's definitely, it was definitely a no for me. So I think appearance, are you dressed appropriately, cleanly, respectfully, and maintain good eye contact. Be friendly and upbeat.
Yeah, if I could interject, when I speak to people in HR, they tell me the same thing. When you go, first of all, you don't get a second chance to make a first impression.
Right.
So when you go there, you want to look professional and be professional. You don't want to, as Paul said, this is a devil, it's very important also, the strong sense of colognes. You know, you don't want to do that. You always want to dress like in business attire, but something that's rather conservative. You don't want to be preoccupied with a cell phone or texting. And a lot of times what happens what recruiters are telling me, if they get a client, that client has to be open to taking a drug test. Now, some people might, you know, not want to do that, but if you don't want to do it, then you probably won't get the job.
Is that an issue, Paul Bernard?
It is in some industries, like in financial services and healthcare, and in some consulting firms. You have to expect to take a drug test. I mean, one of the small business clients I work with, it's really not so small. They run about $40 million a year. I mean, they're handling, you know, very valuable goods and services. And every client prospect, every new employee is drug tested. And in fact, they do random drug testing during the year. I think that I think it depends on the industry, but if you're working in financial services, or in logistics, or in healthcare, you have to expect that you will be drug tested. And if you are foolish enough to say you're violating my privacy,
constitutional rights.
Yeah, I mean, you'll never make progress. No.
Let's take another call or two. This is. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. Goodell in Miami.
Hi, guys. First of all, I want to wish you guys a happy Christmas. I hope it was great.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is a great topic. I agree with basically everything that you guys are saying. Finding a job is, in fact, pretty frustrating in these times. You do have to be dedicated and have a certain mindset. My background and my question essentially is that I graduated in June with a master's degree in finance. And I've been on different job boards, company career sections, and I've often worn a suit and tie and passed my resume from door to door. It's been, you know, a very frustrating experience to the point where I've contemplated taking off my MBA credentials off of my resume, fearing that I might be a little bit overqualified. But my question is, what advice would you give to recent graduates or a professional with no experience at all?
Let me throw out some things right now. I hear your frustration. Have you used your alumni association yet?
I have used my alumni association for networking purposes mainly, yes.
Okay, because that's really crucial. How are you using your alumni association? Most alumni associations have an official alumni association, and then there's a LinkedIn group. Are you a member of both? Are you a member of both?
I am a member of the LinkedIn groups, and I also get emails from time to time about different mixers and different networking events, and I try to attend as much as possible. I also recently did an interview with a career board. It's a section at my last school. It's a career board. Basically, they look over your resume and see what mistakes you might have, or they try to improve your resume for an upcoming job.
All right. You might want to send me an email. I just wrote an article on how to use job boards effectively. I'll be happy to send you a link to that.
Great. We'll give that address, Paul.
It's www.usendit.com.
Say your email again.
You can access it through the website, paul at paulbernard.net.
Oh, okay.
All right. So one of the things that I do have a I'm wondering how you're spending your time. I mean, one of the things I said earlier in the conversation was that you should spend 10% of your time with job boards, 20% of your time with recruiters, and 70% of your time networking. Networking has to be done effectively. It should be, you should move as much toward getting face-to-face conversations as possible.
But how does he network, how does he do all that networking if he doesn't know that many people? He just graduated.
Well, but that's why the Alumni Association is possible. There are probably people in the alumni network through LinkedIn who might be able to chat with him.
Okay.
And what I would do is to go down the the LinkedIn list, and more importantly, the Alumni Association list, the official Alumni Association list, and see if you can approach people who've been who've gotten an MBA through your school, and who are in finance, and just say, the operative word is advice. All right, you can say, I'm not asking you for a job right now, and I'm not asking you if you know of a job right now, but I know you've been in this situation before. You were a new person in the job market before. You too were, you know, a newly minted MBA. Would you have 20 minutes to a half hour to meet me face to face to give me some advice on where I might be able to continue to look during my search? Does that make sense?
You know, one of the things that I would encourage this gentleman to do would be to go to your local civil service commission. Your Civil Service Commission has a wealth of information on all types of jobs, all types of professions, you could have them even evaluate your skill set, your education, and there are probably job titles and positions that you would qualify for that you would never even think of.
I mean,
some of these titles they use for jobs is unbelievable. So, you know, I would say spend some time at your local civil service commission or a civil service commission that's not too far away from you.
I mean, if I could just interject, I think that looking at civil service jobs is a possibility, but since most states and localities are laying people off rather than hiring people, I'm not sure if you want to spend too much time there, but I would certainly look at the list and find, you know, certainly look at the list and see if there are any financial analysis jobs that are available. But I really think the key is to find people in your alumni association who've been in a situation similar to yours and say, look, you were young once. Can you spare 20 minutes to a half hour? And don't just focus on your business school context. Focus on your college context, too.
Okay, Goodell, good luck to you.
Good luck, Goodell.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks for calling in. And we'll move along to Warren. He's in Delray Beach. Thanks for being so patient. Hi.
For you, a pleasure. Happy holidays, Joe, to you and Bonnie.
Thank you.
And Ron and Paul. And thank you for allowing me to join today. Well, much
thanks so
of
much.
What
thank
the gentleman says may be true, especially maybe up there in New York where I used to live, Ron, or as I call it, civilization. Down here in South Florida, where most of the jobs, if you're going to get them, are with the big corporations, the big chain stores, I can tell you they are not interested in seeing your resume, or in my case, because I'm a publishing person, a media person like you, they don't want to see your letters of recommendation. They don't want to see your published work. They don't want to see your press notices. Everything for those crummy minimum wage jobs is on their computer, so-called easy online application. And I can tell you there's nothing easy about the things. An author was on public radio a few years ago, and she went underground, as you might say, undercover, to do her book as a blue-collar applicant. And she found that if you were too young, too old, had any gaps in your employment, were a little too educated, all kinds of silly little things, they didn't want you.
That probably was Barbara Ehrenreich.
It may well have been. You would know better than I.
Book, Nickel and Dimed. Yes.
What she taught is what I remember, and I have found for myself. And some of the so-called human resources people, or I think of them as inhuman resources people, are so egotistically wrapped up with the online applications they supervise that if you use the technique taught in What Color Is Your Parachute, the Job Hunter's Handbook, and try to find out who in that organization is in charge of what you want to do and try to strike up some kind of rapport with that person, that in human resources person can go out of his or her way to get in the way and or even lie about you in order to destroy you.
Warren, we're very short on time. Let's have our expert talk about that.
Please do. Happy New Year.
Okay.
Thank you.
I think there are, what he's saying is true in that many organizations, especially large organizations, have online, as he put it, easy applications. And there, I don't know any large organization that has an online application system that is anything but cumbersome. And it becomes terrible for both the company and for the applicant. A practical question, for instance, there's an online job listed, and they've also decided to hire a recruiter. Then the company and the recruiter get into a firefight over whether the recruiter introduced the applicant or whether the person came in through the online system.
You know, it seems today that if someone sends you snail mail with a real signature on a real piece of paper, it gets your attention much more than emails.
Very interesting point. I have a client who she has not had an offer yet, but she's close to it, and she was very frustrated because actually she's a former PBS producer, a rather prominent person, and she was interested in moving into some visual storytelling consulting, and they all had online applications, and she would get frustrated because she would fill out the application and then there was a blip in the system and she would get knocked off and she would have to start all over again. And I encouraged her to send a snail mail application, one to the office here and the other one to the head office in London. And it helped that she had beautiful handwriting that looked like calligraphy. And she's now had three interviews, and they asked for references, which to me is telling me that they're going to make her an offer. Senior people rarely get snail mail these days. So that's one way of getting through the barrier. I think I don't agree with the caller when he said that all human resources people are inhuman people. But I think everyone is frustrated now. One of the ironies now is that there was so little hiring happening for 4 years, and suddenly hiring is happening, and people have forgotten to hire. People have forgotten how to hire. So I think people should try as best they can to reach out. If the online system is cumbersome, then they should send a snail mail application. I believe that networking in with the Richard Bowles, What Color Is Your Parachute approach still works, but you cannot ignore the HR officer.
Well, we certainly want to thank both of you. We've been speaking with executive coach and consultant Paul Bernard. Once again, your website, Paul, for people who want to learn more about you,
is www.paulbernard.net.
And we also want to thank Ronald Henderson for joining us this afternoon. He's written
been my pleasure.
He's written the book, How to Cope with Unemployment, Find a Job in Any Economy, and also Save Money. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for some great information.
Thank you.
Thank you. Happy New Year,
everybody. Thank
you. You too.
And that wraps up today's edition. My apologies to the callers we couldn't get on the air. Our producer is Richard Ive, technical direction from Caroline Brader Watts. Paul Leary is online producer. Follow us on the Topical Currents Facebook page. Drop us a like so your friends can find us as well. We also have free audio archives and downloads of today's and previous programs at our website. That's WLRN.org. Tomorrow's program should be fun. It's with writer Constance Hale about her book, Verbs. Also, Linda Gassenheimer's Food and Dining with wine columnist Fred Tasker. New Year's will be the topic. And to the calendar. December 26th, Boxing Day. On this day in 1492, 520 years ago, Christopher Columbus establishes Spain's first colony in the Americas on Hispaniola in what is now Haiti. Also on this day in 1893, 119 years ago, the birth of Mao Zedong, founder of the People's Republic of China, established in 1949. He ruled until 1976. And one more while we assert the buck stops here. On this day in 1972, 40 years ago, the death of Harry S. Truman, 33rd president, at age 88 in Independence, Missouri. Before entering politics, Truman was an Army lieutenant colonel in World War I. Our theme music, created by Michael Levine. So we leave with thoughts of Harry Truman after a bad review of his daughter Margaret's singing. I have read your lousy review of Margaret's concert. Someday I hope to meet you. When that happens, you'll need a new nose, a lot of beefsteak for black eyes, and perhaps a supporter below. Very presidential. This is Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman. Thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Next, it's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
This is 91.3.